With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Much appreciated in this new year, new time. I think we're still able to talk about that stuff now. It's still in January, so I can still wish everyone a happy new year, 2022. Lots of new things, new times. Right, Katie? We can do that still.
This might be our last week, I have to say.
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah, this might be. I feel like third week. We talked about this last time, and third week is like you got to – anyone worthwhile that you're going to talk to and like would have wished a happy new year, It's happened already, or you got to make it happen this week.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be seeing some family this weekend, and I believe this will be a topic without us even knowing who's going to bite the bullet and say happy new year, happy 2022.
Probably
I don't know.
Probably you.
It might be me. Just to stir the pot a little bit. With Katie, we're going to talk a little bit about Kyle Lowry, because why the hell not? No, he didn't play yesterday, and that's okay. That doesn't mean we can't talk about him, because he is Kyle Lowry. And also, I mean, there's a few games coming up with the Heat. It's actually going to be very telling with the Raptors and how they are and where they are within the scope of the Eastern Conference. So we're going to talk about him a little bit, his impact on the Raptors franchise, his impact on the Heat, and also the game last night, because it was interesting. Yes, the Raptors lost. Some things to look at, some things to be curious about with the Raptors after that game. I was saying to Katie offline that, you know, at some point, we do just kind of have to stop talking about the fact that the Raptors are long and this is what they're doing, because it was very innovative at the beginning, but now we're in January, new year. And it's like, I mean, how much do we continue to talk about it? But there were some very interesting things to discuss from that game. But first, on the Kyle Lowry subject, Katie, you did a piece about Mary Holloway, Kyle's mom, and it was a great written piece. And I believe it's pinned on your Twitter page at whatevs, right?
It's not pinned, but it's up. It's probably the last thing up there.
Yeah, you're not an active tweeter. You only do a couple every once in a while. I respect it. Thanks. And every time you do, you do bring gold. So that's a good thing too. But yeah, you did the piece on Mary Holloway, and it was pretty much about, you know, how she formed her relationship with Raptors Twitter, her relationship with, the Raptors as a whole, and how she's continued it. So just to start with her, what was your biggest takeaway from your conversation? Because it was a great piece. And I mean, she's really fun.
She's super fun. I mean, we'd chatted with her before on Dishes and Dimes. We were lucky enough to have her on once, but to chat with Marie one-on-one, you know, she's super warm, super knowledgeable. There was so much good stuff that had to get cut. Unfortunately, that's kind of how it goes with print. But just about, we talked about DeMar's game, we're talking about Kyle Lowry's game, the Raptors game, just like she knows basketball, you know, like backwards and forwards. And she's extremely funny. And she says Kyle doesn't find her funny at all, but she's extremely funny. And I think just generally, I was sort of curious, like how she found Raptors Twitter. Did she find them? Did they find her? She found them. And like the rest is kind of history, but it is one of those things where it feels like she's been a part of the online community for such a long time, and still like remains a part of the community, even though, you know, Kyle doesn't play for the Raptors anymore, much like his fingerprints are kind of all over the team. I feel like she's just as embedded in the Raptors community. So, I mean, probably my biggest takeaways were just like, we were really lucky to have her as involved with us for as long as we had her. And we're still lucky, you know, to have her kind of around and checking in every now and then. Yeah, Marie rules.
Not to spoil too much of your piece, but shouts to the Joseph cousins, bros, whatever, Chris and Corey.
Because they're
a big reason why she was found on Raptors Twitter. No one really knew who she was. And then it came up that, oh, wait, this is Kyle's mom. And like you said, the rest is history. I appreciate how level-headed she is, because as we know with Raptors Twitter, it can be a fiery place. It can be an emotional place. And she's always the calm mom, right? Every single time, every time there was a loss, like, oh, but these are the positives. And I think early on this season when she was following the team and there was a lot of reason to be, I guess, a little bit negative about who they are and who they were going to be and a lot of uncertainty because of all the moving pieces. But she was like, you know, stick to the script. They're going to be fine. Trust Fred, trust Pascal, trust OG, trust Masai, Nick. And here they are. And they've done, I mean, they've kind of turned a corner with their seasons over the past, I guess, 5 weeks or so. And we'll get to the rest of that eventually. But first, Kyle Lowry. So the reason why I wanted to talk to you about Kyle is because, I mean, I appreciate your perspective on I guess, like more holistic things, looking at things from a broader picture. And I want to know is, you know, 10 years from now, how do you think Raptor fans will be viewing Kyle Lowry?
I mean, I think a lot of the way that we already do, like the greatest Raptor, I think, in franchise history. But I think those things also tend to grow over time, right, and become like mythologized. But I think with Kyle Lowry, it's definitely warranted. You know, he changed, like he changed the shape of the franchise. He changed the look and feel and shape of the team. Granted, like the team is changing and is kind of going into what its next iteration is going to be. But his like toughness, I think his sense of intangibles, of doing everything he can, you know, to get a possession, to get the shot, to get the point that hopefully comes out of that. You know, I think he's left the Raptors with that in their DNA, totally. I think he made them a much tougher team, a very scrappy team. They were always underdogs for a really long time, as any Raptors fan can kind of attest to. But there was this sort of sense of like, woe is us. A little bit. I mean, like, you know, Vince left, Bosch left, like people left, right? It was a franchise for a long time that the greatest players would leave, or it didn't seem like people wanted to come here. Like it wasn't an attractive destination. And I think Lowry really changed that in a totally like top to bottom way, along with Masai Ujiri. But I do think the two of them worked in kind of perfect tandem, especially as Lowry matured as a player and as a person, to really say like, you know what, so what, like screw everybody else, kind of like we know how good we are. We know what we have here at home and we're going to work to grow that. And I think just like that chip, like we became less sorry for ourselves, but we didn't lose the chip on our shoulders, I think, as Toronto Raptors, as a Toronto Raptors franchise as a whole. And I think to an extent fans, but I think Lowry just like, he gave us that gift. He gave us a different kind of gift of confidence that the team didn't necessarily always have.
I mean, spot on. I think kind of the We the North era that started around the time that things started popping off for the Raptors, 2013, 2014. And he kind of embodied all of that. And we should give some credit to like to DeMar and Dwayne Casey too, because they were a big part of who the Raptors were, the identity. It's easy to say Kyle because you became an NBA champion with the Raptors and so forth. But DeMar and Dwayne Casey, I mean, this is why Dwayne Casey doing such a good job with the Pistons. And we know he's 5-0 against the Raptors since he was fired by the Raptors. But yeah, all of them, they really did kind of understand those values and put forth like, this is how you develop a winning culture, a winning identity. And with Kyle specifically, I mean, it's just like that bullying side of him. That's like relentless, like go forward, constantly a chip on your shoulder. That was what kind of the We the North era was, sort of like the slogans around it. It was just like, be proud of who you are, you know, as Masai said back in the day, like have confidence in yourself, you know, believe in yourself, believe in Toronto, all that. Like it kind of started with Kyle Lowry and this identity, this desire to, you know, punch above your weight, regardless of the situation, regardless of who you're up against, you keep on pushing forward and then you live with the results, but you always maintain that confidence in yourself. And Kyle, I mean, he's nothing but if not confident. He's always confident in his abilities. When it comes to the Raptors franchise, like, how do you think the impact will be there?
I mean, you see the markers of it in like the way Fred VanVleet approaches the game, I think, completely.
Baby bear. Baby bear is maybe
how the baby bear is, as Marie Holloway noted. Very cute, extremely endearing. But I think, you know, I mean, VanVleet's also said this, right? Like he got the best two sort of vets he could ever hope for in DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. He was with Kyle Lowry a bit longer than he was with DeMar, but I think it kind of showed him how to lead a team. Mm-hmm. Now he's stepped fully into that role, and it's gonna change a little bit. You got to put your own spin on things. But I think you see it in him. You can see it in Pascal Siakam, especially with, I'd say, the confidence that Pascal sort of grew into his game, maybe coming out of the shadow of Lowry a little bit this season. Yeah. See it in OG Anunoby. You see it even like in the guy, like in Chris Boucher, and just players who have been with the team for longer. But what's more interesting to me is how you actually see it in brand new players, right? Like brand new players like Scottie Barnes and players like Delano Benton, who, like, we don't want to talk about mythologize the Raptors, because at this point, like at that point in his career when he was coming up, when he was in high school and then in college, like that was where he wanted to be, and a lot of that due to Kyle Lowry. But in the way that they play the game, Scottie Barnes especially, he's everywhere on the floor at all times, yeah. You know, and like he kind of has leaned fully in to that Kyle Lowry mindset. So I think that style of basketball, this kind of craftiness, it's not necessarily the most elegant basketball to watch. You know, there are teams that I think are a little bit more fluid to watch in that sense. But that's never really what the Raptors build themselves as, especially, you know, in the time of Lowry. So I think just like that grittiness, I think that's sort of here to stay.
Yeah, definitely. And when you look at him and the impact that he's had on the franchise, like you can kind of, yeah, it's just a blueprint right there. And the best part is that it actually worked, you know, like, you know, they were practicing what they were preaching and like the unselfishness. And I've always really appreciated about the Raptors. And like, I think other franchises probably have this as well, but like that term family that they use, it's, you hear it all the time. And I think this kind of started with Masai, but also it was Kyle Lowry too, and DeMar. I keep on saying DeMar too, but it's like the little stories that we hear over the years of, like, you know, Kyle and DeMar taking rookies out and saying, let's go to the mall and get whatever you want. It's like Kyle hosting all these Thanksgiving dinners. How he was with the media wasn't exactly who he was with his teammates. I mean, I think, sure, he was stubborn and a little bit prickly sometimes. And I love hearing some of those stories earlier on during lockdown, it was DeMar and Fred, and they were talking about cases where like Kyle would just be like sitting on the floor during practice because he didn't want to practice or he didn't like how things were going. So he would just be like, practice is done, we're not doing this anymore. And anyway, those are funny stories that they always had. And I'm sure there's plenty more, but at the same time, you know, building your confidence in yourself and, you know, finding ways to just win games, just whatever it is, who knows? And this is why, you know, Kyle Lowry, he's such a interesting player. And I think this is changing a little bit since he's been with the Heat, is that people are starting to understand like how good he actually is, and that, you know, the way he impacts games, you can't even, it's not even on the box scores. You can't see it. It's just in everything. And we'll get into like some of the comments from Heat players since he got there, but you're seeing it from other, like, you know, the big media pundits. And I hate going down this path because it shouldn't matter, but it kind of does validate what we always felt. Like, Kyle has been good for a long, long time. Like, he's 35 now. Obviously, he's had better years in his career, and he's, you know, built all this knowledge of, you know, the basketball IQ that he has. And you can see it in the confidence that an OG, the Fred especially, the way he conducts himself, and also that unselfishness when it comes to, you know, helping other players grow their games. Like that photo last season when the Raptors were pretty much tanking, and you see Fred and Kyle and they're talking to Malachi Flynn, like that exactly embodies of who Kyle Lowry was. Like, he just wanted to see you reach your potential. How many times we heard it? Like, he just wants to see guys get paid. He got Ken Birch paid. He got Serge Ibaka paid. He just wants to see guys be successful. And having that care about your fellow man, your fellow teammate, like, that is kind of rare. That is not something that you see all the time. And that's not something you can really measure either. And how that, you know, translates to wins isn't something that's really going to be seen. But, you know, for how many years now, the Raptors, every single year, you see how close they are. And you look at other teams in the NBA, like, you can tell that there is not that camaraderie on the bench, but every year, like, without fail, doesn't matter who's coming in, who's out, whatever, you see guys gelling really, really well. And that's like the family aspect that I'm talking about. Justin Champagne, he said it in an open gym episode the other day, he's like, the reason why I wanted to come to Toronto is like, yeah, I saw guys like Fred and Pascal and OG kind of building their careers and, you know, becoming like who they are now. But also, it was like, I really appreciated how much it seemed like the Raptors cared about their players. And Nick Nurse talked about this. Geez, like, we should mention him too a little bit, because he joined the Raptors in 2013, right? He's been here for a while. He was an assistant for like 4 or 5 years. And what's his hallmark about talking about players? That he wants to help them grow market value in the market, right? Mm-hmm. Like that means like he wants to help you be successful. Like regardless of how you're going to help the Raptors, like let's find ways to make you the best version of yourself. And again, that's kind of starts with a person like Kyle. He just wanted to see everyone be successful. Go forth, conquer, work hard, you know, do your job. And be unselfish, do what you're told, sacrifice if you need to for the betterment of the team, and things are going to be okay. And I mean, how many ways can you say it? Like Kyle Lowry, his impact, I think he's now helped like Fred be this way to some degree, because Fred was already, you know, he is who he is, obviously, and that's okay. But he's helped so many players, you know, find their way in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And now that's going to help a Delano, that's going to help a Malachi Flynn, that's going to help other players. Now that they've seen this is how you conduct yourself in the NBA, other players are going to do this. And now you're kind of paying it forward years upon years upon years. So it's actually kind of hard to measure the impact of Kyle Lowry on the Raptors franchise or on the NBA as a whole. You know, one of my low key hopes is Kyle would never do this because he's a family man, but I wanted to see him just like go like team hop for the rest of his NBA career and just like create his Kyle culture. Just like make it go NBA wide. So everyone in the NBA is playing like Kyle Lowry. That's what I hope. I want to see it.
I think though, I mean, there are definitely tangible things that you know that he's done in the league at large. You know, I think he's changed what a point guard can look like. He's not that sort of prototypic lights out shooter like a Steph Curry or a Damian Lillard. You know, he's small, he's strong. We talked about this, like maybe he's not as graceful in his game, quote, but that's because he's willing to get his hands dirty, you know, whenever and wherever he can, or like take charge after mm-hmm. charge, right? He certainly brought taking charges back in vogue. And I think, you know, we did touch on this, but like his trust too for a point guard, I think, in letting his teammates get touches and like take on decision making has made for what we're seeing now in the Raptors is this like close to positionless, or this idea of fluidity within basketball. A lot of that was ushered in by the way that Kyle Lowry played, and now you're seeing that, you know, be adapted league large. So I think beyond the things that we've touched on, which is turning the Raptors into a developmental culture, whether that's for your game or for your career, like you say, you know, a player's value in the marketplace, or even the value is then it applies to their career longevity and how long they may stay in the NBA.
Sure.
And learning to kind of lean on and learn different skills to stay valuable. Like look at Danny Green, right? Look at Danny Green after he left the Raptors. Like he kind of acclimatized his game perfectly to fit where it was he was going. He didn't really mm-hmm. have that with the Spurs, you know, prior to coming to Toronto, he didn't really utilize that. So there are so many examples of that. So I think, again, the Kyle Lowry effect, to borrow a Marie Holloway-ism, like you can see it team side and you can see it league wide.
Yeah. My favorite meme that was going around when Kyle was being traded is that, you know, that Ninja Turtle meme with Splinter and the four Ninja Turtles and like they become their kids. Yes. I know you've seen it, right? But it's perfect though, right? It's exactly how we view this. And I mean, Kyle probably would embrace a meme like that because I think he's just like, yes, all my little kids, like, look at them flourish, look at them go. I'm happy you mentioned Danny Green actually, because I talked to Danny, it was a few weeks ago. Yeah, he was gracious enough to give me time. And one of the things he said about Kyle is that the reason we wanted to play with Kyle is because of how quickly he gets the ball down the floor. And he's like, it's such a huge thing for myself, who's a great transition 3-point shooter and just a great, you know, shooter overall, is that if you have a point guard who can get you the ball exactly where you want to get it, like that is a huge difference maker. And this is a natural pivot to his impact on the Heat, because this is where, like I mentioned, that the pundits out there, the ones that don't typically pay attention to Kyle Lowry, this is where they're seeing like, oh, wait, this is what he's doing. A player like, you know, Tyler Hero, who says the first 2 years in the league, I didn't really have a point guard that could get everyone organized to their spots. We know who his point guard was in the first 2 years of his career. We don't have to talk about it, but you guys know. Yeah, we know. Anyways, a comment like that, and Tyler Hero's having one, the best season of his career, I believe. So it's like that ability, that basketball IQ, that's where like Kyle, you understand why people love playing with him. Other than that, though, how have you seen him impact?
I mean, I will say, just for what you're kind of hinting at, I do think, unfortunately, there is truth to this like Canadianism of like where he spent, you know, the last, like the majority of his career up to now. And the fact that a lot of Americans, be it fans or broadcasters, like Canada kind of eclipsed the Kyle Lowry experience for them. It doesn't mean that he wasn't always like this, you know, and I'm half of me is very happy that now he's getting the more broad attention he deserves. But I think you also do have to recognize that it kind of sucks that like a lot of his development sort of happened in the dark, maybe, or like with not as much shine. Though I also wonder if he would have become the player he is if he didn't have that, like to go back to that chip on his shoulder thing. But with the Heat, like organization, 100%, you know, like when you have, like Jimmy Butler on the team, who is like a self-proclaimed like hard ass and just like probably one of the toughest leaders on any team. But when you have Jimmy Butler saying, like, compared to Kyle Lowry, you know, he's nothing. And like, we've seen that of Lowry. It's just like, you didn't see that as much. You saw his kind of softer side in the last few seasons with the Raptors because they were organized. It was like second sense to them. Everything was very intuitive because they've been playing with each other and with Kyle for so long. So now he's kind of, you know, he's giving them their marching orders, right? And he's not afraid to tell them where to be at all times on the floor. That's the way that he sees the game. I think the Heat needed that organization because you're actually going to get so much more, especially out of like role players like Duncan Robinson. We haven't talked about yet, like, you know, Tyler Hero for sure. And I think just like that's the depth on that team is young-ish, and that's good for Kyle. Like he's like, you saw that with the Raptors too, right? Like he's very willing to like teach and to train and to like get young players up to speed. Yeah, I'm sure he like puts them through their, you know, if they're a rookie or whatever, like he puts them through their requisite steps. But he's also not a vet that's like checks in and checks out, right? Like he wants to be there for his guys, you know, all the time, not just on like in practice or in game. He wants to like kind of teach them and have them learn from him as much as they're willing to. If they're smart, they'll take as much as they can get. But you're definitely seeing that. I think it definitely helps clear things up for Jimmy Butler, you know, who isn't the most, who can get a bit like stretched out and I think disparate on the floor, for Bam too, like Bam Adebayo coming back with Kyle. Like Kyle has just, there's a little bit of this like Marc Gasol, Kyle Lowry echoes of it with like Bam and Kyle. You can see that. And I think just like for Spo, like for Spoelstra, he's a dream because he's a coach point guard, right? So he's also taking half the load on the floor. Or you don't have to explain things very much to him. You just kind of show him the play and he's like, all right, I got it. Because he is a savant like that too.
Oh, savant, that's a good word. Yes, he is. Yes, he is. It's funny that Pat Riley, when he signed Kyle and they were doing the introduction interview, he said that I really like Kyle's chaos. The Kyle chaos is what he called it.
Chaos. So
it's it's like it's organized chaos because and this is what we're talking about. And this is also why, you know, that Kyle plus bench was always so successful. And it's been successful in Miami too. Like Jimmy Butler, Bam, and Kyle have only played 15 games together this season. 14 actually, because Kyle didn't play last night. So yeah, they played 14 games together this season and the Miami Heat are doing very, very well. Kyle's been healthy, I believe, for almost all the games. So how are they winning games? Well, it's what you're talking about. It's Kyle Lowry knowing how to organize his players. How you give him some guys who are willing to work hard, who can shoot the ball. He's going to make some good things happen for anyone. And that kind of ability and his confidence in himself, the confidence he puts in his teammates, like you had mentioned, he puts everyone in a position to be successful. And he said this earlier on in the season is that, you know, our team right now is everyone is enjoying seeing each other's success. And that's exactly what he would say in Toronto too. So that is like the Kyle Lowry impact that we're talking about. And, you know, with him now and kind of his poise down the stretch of games, I think he's grown in that. Obviously early on in his career with Toronto, it was a bit hit and miss, but I think of that moment in the bubble. It was game six, and that was a game that he had like an incredible game against the Celtics, and they're in overtime. And what's he doing? Like double OT. He's just like playing with Jason Tatum's wristband. It's like, why are you doing this? But like, that's how calm he was. He was truly like completely grounded, completely centered. And I mean, having someone like that on your team, when you have championship aspirations and, you know, rightly so, like they got a really, really good team over there and they just needed to figure out their half court offense. that was something that we weren't really sure about. How is it going to look? But with Kyle, it looks pretty good because you have him, Kyle Lowry. My goodness. Who knows how many more years he plays. I hope he does. Like I said to you, Katie, I hope he does end up, you know, doing that roundabout route, going through the NBA and just like teaching everyone how to play basketball, because I think that'd be really, really cool. Who did that recently? I guess Rajon Rondo's kind of doing that. He's played for like 10 teams in the NBA.
Yeah.
Not by choice. I think
not by like choice, though. Home. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. Closing up the Kyle Lowry section, because he is going to be returning to Toronto. As far as we know, it's not going to be in front of a packed house. Unfortunately, it is what it is. But how would you like to see them celebrate him? Pre-game festivities, in-game, all that stuff.
Yeah, though you're right. Like it's unfortunately going to be a bit limited. But I think the only thing to take away from that is they're just going to have to do it again. So we're going to get two homecomings, really. You know, yay. This one will be more privately, I think, for Kyle, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think it's kind of nice. And the next one, I think, once fans are back in the arena, will be for the fans. For like the way that he's impacted them. So that's kind of cool, because when it comes to Kyle Lowry, I am of the mind that you can't celebrate him enough. So I think the montages are too short. I'm all for the welcome back montages.
I agree.
So you could give me a montage every quarter. Don't just do it at the first time out as you typically do. And you know, usually they're what, like 2 minutes? I could you could do one general. You could do then like a charges montage, best charges taken.
That's true.
You could have like a really funny and cute and candid one with some of those moments. Like the Tatum wristband is perfect. Him like in the Wendemar and him, this is like one of my all time favorite photos, but Wendemar and him had their all-star pictures taken and Larry's in the back window. Behind Demar making that face like a Slimer from Ghostbusters. Beautiful. Something like that. And then I think like the natural celebration, once fans are back and you can get to that again, we'll just like that'll just come. And like the tears will come. It's gonna be super, super dramatic. I don't really know that you need to create like more fanfare or kind of like more like manufactured moments around it, because it's just going to happen naturally. Like people want to celebrate. If people in Toronto want to celebrate Kyle Lowry as much as they can and whenever they can with like any mention of his name. Right.
Yeah.
So like if he's just there in the flesh and he's playing, I think like that's things will just happen.
I didn't look this up before, so I decided to check now. Next time the Heat come to Toronto is April 3rd. So that could be the time that you're talking
there
about. Hopefully the world's in a better spot and there could be some fans in the stands. I would really like to see him do his pregame ritual that he did with the Raptors. He could do that again with them, like the Raptors. You know, they go on that side and they do the whole thing. OG's sleeping. Pascal's doing sit-ups. All that stuff. I want to see that one more time. And I'm curious, like, do they, if Kawhi, like when they were trying to re-sign Kawhi, the claim was that he would never have to pay for another meal in the city. Okay. So then obviously Kyle deserves much more than that. So what does he get? A key to the city? Is that it? I don't know, but it has to be one up above that. I'm not sure what it is, but it has to be something in there. Then montages. Absolutely. There has to be a Chargers one. Sometimes they do like, they'll do like a 2 minute version for the in game, but then, you know, they'll post like the longer version online. You know what? No fans are going to be there anyways. Just like play the whole thing. Do a 10 minute thing. Who the hell knows? It would be cool if some players, Raptor players, like talk to him. You know, they got center floor. They spoke to him. A few of them said a few words. OG, Masai, Nick, Pascal, whatever. Like get all of them to say a few words about it, or just play a video where they've all said something about him. That would be good too. That's kind of where I was with it. And obviously, if you want to unveil the.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Statue early, you could do that too.
True. Yeah, true. That's a good time to do plans. Maybe release a couple plans, have fans Blueprints. Start voting for them. Yeah.
Ooh, that's interesting. The fans vote for what the Kyle Lowry statue will be.
That's what I always pictured would be kind of the nicest thing, right? I mean, the Raptors Raptors got their name in a fan vote. So why not do this kind of next big thing by a fan vote as well?
Yeah. See who ends up in the All-Star game. I think Fred's going to be there. And I think sneakily, I think Pascal has a chance too, but he's got to have some crazy games and the Raptors have to get back up there in the standings. I think they're eighth right now at the moment. Mm-hmm. Eighth? Nope, they're ninth. That sucks. But three games back of sixth. So they're going to be on the road for a little while. Good building blocks for them. And now this is, a natural pivot to the game last night because very competitive game against the Miami Heat. They lost by a couple points. Second half, like both teams didn't even like scratch 50 points. Like they really clamped down. And it was one of those like rugged defensive efforts. And you kind of saw the Miami Heat, the toughness that they play with. And I think the Raptors down the stretch of the game, like they looked really tired. I think Fred mm-hmm. looked exhausted. Pascal, OG. Yeah, they just didn't have it in their legs. And then that's kind of where like possessions were like, you know, Tyler Hero's getting downhill, Caleb Martin's like beating Pascal, like it's be happening because they just didn't have the legs for it. I mean, my God, six players on the Raptors played more than 9 minutes. Justin Champagne was the only person on the bench outside of Chris Boucher to get some playing time. He played 9 minutes. Yuta Watanabe, who we were told is available, but not playing. It seems like Nick is kind of putting the clamps down a little bit on young Yuta Watanabe, saying, you got to be better. How he has to be better? I mean, is it three-point shooting? He's got to make more shots. He obviously always does hustle, but anyways, only seven players played yesterday. Justin Champagne was one of them. He played 9 minutes. Everyone else, like you're looking at every single other person played at least 33 minutes. And OG was that person that only happened because he was in foul trouble. So everyone would have been probably around 36 plus. A lot of minutes between those guys. But I'll throw it over to you, Katie. What were your thoughts on the Heat game yesterday?
It was a very physical game. Super physical. I think that's what I kind of noticed. Even though when the Raptors were throwing out their biggest lineup that they could, they were still getting kind of out-muscled, tossed around a little bit. I think that's what lent to them looking so tired by the end of the game. Granted, there is the huge point of maybe five or six guys on the team getting all the minutes in this last little stretch and there being a bit of a non-existent bench that certainly doesn't help for everyone's level of freshness. Being on the road doesn't help either. I thought that Miami focused a lot of its manpower on OG Anunoby. I thought they were like really doubling up on him in the paint. They were hitting him with some pretty hard box outs. He can handle that kind of stuff. But when you see him coming down and looking rattled and taking shots here and there, you know, he is not a player or a person who necessarily is very reactionary, you know, but when he's starting to react to that stuff, you know, that those are some hard hits. And then I think because of that, a lot of the rebounding fell to Scottie Barnes and Chris Boucher. And, you know, Boucher against the Heat, he did not look as strong as he has in recent games. He looked like the smallest part of that big lineup, which is always a bit, you know, surprising to see. But it was close. It seemed like a game that Toronto could win. It did seem like a game that they trailed a little bit in the third. They kept it pretty close throughout like the beginning of the fourth. And then the Heat just like PJ Tucker loves that corner pocket. He will always hit his shot from there. And there was a couple just like decision making errors. I think maybe some of that just came from fatigue, right? Yeah. From Scottie Barnes, you know, and some other players. But I think the Raptors outplayed the Heat, I would say. The Heat just got a few better looks and some of their shots fell. And sometimes that's just what happens in a ball game.
Ain't that the truth? I was looking up, if people are watching on YouTube, I was looking up what OG has shot over his last three games because, yeah, it hasn't been great. And I learned that he's 19 of 51 mm-hmm. over his last three games. So that's 37%. He's taken a lot more shots. And I talked to Oren Weisfeld a couple of days ago. It was about how OG is using his body more to create his offense. And also it was about, you know, how the Raptors are going to kind of utilize OG more because he's been sort of sidelined a little bit when it comes to just like, you know, getting more isolation possessions, mm-hmm. More getting downhill, becoming a playmaker. And he's been kind of a spot up shooter because they sort of needed that because of the lack of shooting, and Pascal was doing such a good job. So it's like, all right, well, we have this OG Anunoby guy who's like shooting 40% from three, great catch and shoot guy. He needs to be in that corner, but then also you need OG to just, you know, continue to develop. And also he has a mismatch in a lot of cases. And it was interesting seeing yesterday with the Raptors that they did a lot of mismatch hunting, like a lot. Like that's why Precious Achiuwa was getting post-ups, and Scottie Barnes first game back after missing a few, he shot 6 of 18, and all of them were like in the paint against like Strauss or Harrow or Robinson. And he didn't perform that well. And I think with the Raptors, as they go forward, you know, they're going to need those to be complete possession. They're going to need those to be buckets because they had got like great shots, but they just weren't going down necessarily. And like the mismatching, they did that a little bit down stretch of games. And again, with OG, again, we talked about it with Oren, is that shot that he had, like, I think it was 2 minutes left, and he airballed a turnaround jumper, which was like 4 feet away. Like mm-hmm. you don't need to be taking a turnaround jumper from 4 feet away. Like that should be maybe a turnaround hook shot. And he needs to add that element to his game. He's obviously so strong. Once he creates that space between him and his defender, like go up, hook shot, make that your bread and butter, because he's going to need something to be successful down the post. Mm-hmm. Then Jesus, the decision-making. Yeah. Scottie Barnes had a 2-on-1 with Pascal and nothing came from it. Pascal was kind of just like, bro, what the hell? Because they were down by 3 points at that point, and that would have made it a one possession game. Next possession afterwards, like he got an open three, he missed it. That's okay. That happens. But it's like little things like this that really do cost you. And it kind of shows, you know, how the Raptors are going to get to that next level, is that they need to be able to execute down the stretch of games, because against these great teams, the Miami Heat, Phoenix Suns, like they got this down like clockwork, and the Heat didn't even have freaking Kyle Lowry. So they're going to get better at this stuff too. And the Raptors, yeah, there's some strides to make. But that's okay. I mean, this is part of the process. And that's why myself and many others have said that this is your year to do that. Hopefully they get a top six spot, but next season is where you really want to think about, you know, how can we become a championship team? And these are the times to get the kinks out. And hopefully Scottie Barnes kind of figured that stuff out. He becomes a bit more consistent in mismatches. And OG, man, turn on hook shot. Just make that happen for yourself, please, because it's going to make your life so much easier. It doesn't need to be a fadeaway jumper all the time. Any other thoughts on the Heat game, Katie?
Yeah, I think, you know, you touched on Scottie Barnes a little bit, and I've seen a few stories going around today, just like criticisms, I think, on Barnes. You know, like he did have a couple bad reads that led to some bad decisions. Yeah. You mentioned the most notable, I think, which was one of the last possessions running the ball up the floor. You know, he and Pascal didn't get that. They're a little bit too late to execute the fast break properly. And then he brought the lead up to six. So you knew it was a bit downhill then. One, I think he's probably tired, as we said. Like he's been relying on heavily yeah, sure. all season so far, especially like during this last stretch with the lack of bench. And it's not going to let up. So part of that is just mm-hmm. an adjustment. It's his first year in the NBA. These are the most like serious game reps he's ever had in his career thus far, and the way that he's mm-hmm. bounced back in his decision making. And I think his recovery leads me to believe that he will do that again. He will just get better. And, you know, two, he's a rookie. I think the good thing about bad reads in this case, especially the really bad reads, is like your own bad decisions. Like think about the worst last decision you made, and maybe how embarrassed it made you. You're not going to want to do it again. And likewise, yeah. Scottie Barnes is not going to want to do those bad, like he's not going to want to have any part of the bad reads that he had in some, like at the last minutes in that he came again. So again, like these are just more silver lining takeaways. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, with a rookie like Barnes, you got to take the good with the bad, because if you're not getting the bad, you are limiting his development.
Mm-hmm. I mean, with all that said, he shot 6 of 18. That's unfortunate, but 8 rebounds, 6 assists, made a lot of great passes. And that's been the constant for Scotty Barnes throughout this season. I love seeing him as a backup point guard. I mean, it sucks for Delano and Malachi because those are two point guards who do need, you know, time to get some reps in. But Scotty Barnes, like, that is where you want him. You know, 3 years down the road, what's Scotty Barnes going to be? Like, you want him to be that, like, true point forward, someone mm-hmm. who's just like an absolute monster on every side of the floor, who's absolutely everywhere, who you really can't stop. All you can do is contain. That's where you want him to be, and him becoming, you know, getting those reps as a backup point guard, and also just, you know, getting some of those spot up 3-point shots. He shot 2 of 5 yesterday, made a late one, which is really, really good. It's really important that he does that, because if you don't give him those chances, like you're saying, like, you are limiting his ceiling, and his ceiling is to infinity and beyond. And the Raptors have to go all in on that, because he could be your franchise cornerstone for years to come. You talk, like, you know, culture, like Kyle, or Scotty Barnes really does embody that Kyle Lowry culture. He mm-hmm. works hard, great attitude, wants to see his teammates be successful. Like, this is why Masai and Bobby were like, we need to get this guy because of all these things. So no concerns about him necessarily. I just wonder how he's going to improve for the rest of this year, because it would be great to see them get that top six. It's right there for the taking with the way things have gone down for the Cleveland Cavaliers and the 76ers. You know, they're still figuring things out themselves. So the top six spot is, like, definitely in the taking if they could just get there. But if not, I mean, play-in's cool too. And you just kind of see where the cards fall, I guess. Looking at next season, a little fun one for you, Katie. So 3 players on their bench. We've talked about it nonstop. Many have, you know, they're not getting consistent production from their bench. Chris Boucher, Precious Achiuwa, Yuta Watanabe. A game of start, sit, and drop between those boy. 3 for next season. So a start would be, this is rotation minutes. A sit would be, they are a depth bench piece. And then a drop is, obviously, they are no longer with the team. As I said to you, you know, a little while ago, like, next season is a year where you can really make a move in the NBA if everything, you know, goes accordingly. And that's something to be considered, is, like, how many depth pieces do you take on when you have, like, a Justin Champagne and Delano and Malachi? Like, these are players that you want to keep in your system, presumably, because they're still here. So, yeah, you got to make some tough calls. So, question to you, Katie: start, sit, drop, Chris Boucher, Precious Achiuwa, Yuta Watanabe. It's a tough one.
You said this was a fun exercise. It's not
fun for me. Fun for me.
It's not very fun. Let's see. I would start Precious Achiuwa. Like, I just, like, I believe so much in him as a player. I think that he came out of the bumpy plateau that he had late in the fall so nicely. And I think he's done that by focusing on one thing at a time. I don't think it can be overestimated. I don't think it can be underscored enough how difficult it is to be the, quote, modern NBA player that you are asking a player like Precious Achiuwa to be. You mm-hmm. want him to do absolutely everything. You don't just want him to be a traditional big, right? You want him to have all these stretch capabilities. He's got to shoot. He's got to guard. Like, he has to do a little bit of playmaking. Like, this is a lot for any player to take on, let alone, like, a second-year player. So he's going to have stretches where all of that, like, the wheels come off, right? Yeah. And you got to focus on one thing at a time. And he's done that beautifully. And I think if he continues to do that, he has and should have a pretty substantial part in, like, the new look Raptors.
Mm.
The next two are tough because I really like Yuta. And I think we saw such great flashes from him last season, toward the end of last season in Tampa, and then just the way that he developed over the summer and worked on it and came back. He had an unfortunate, like, you know, he was injured and he was out, and, like, that's going to, again, like, really disrupt your rhythm entirely as a player. Sure. So any gains that he may have just lost. Can you tell I'm, like, talking myself into some of these answers?
It's a tough one.
Yeah, it is tough. I would say to bench then Yuta to sort of keep him, but with the understanding that you're gonna utilize him in your bench and kind of as a backup wherever you can, because ostensibly he is going to get better over the summer. And then Boucher, I would say, this is very difficult, but Boucher, I would say you can trade, and I say this from my most, like, callous part of my basketball heart, but with a caveat that he's going to have the best like value as a player. So he's actually probably going to end up in a great situation if you traded him at the end of this season. So it's it could potentially be a win-win for the team. So I'm not saying ditch this guy because he's like not contributing to the team, because Chris Boucher has been on fire. Mm-hmm. But I think when you look at the way he's grown and how he's fit, he doesn't necessarily fit as seamlessly, I think, as these other two guys into where I think the Raptors are going. But also, I'm not the GM, and I thank God for that.
Yeah, Masai Ujiri never afraid to make that tough decision. Although, I mean, I'm sure he thinks about it and it keeps him up at night. But yeah, he will make that call. Listen, like, there's nothing wrong with what you suggested, because
thanks. Alan.
Yeah, like, I mean that nicely, because this is a very tough question, and these are three people with the franchise that you could make a case for everyone. You can make a case for everyone to be get rotation minutes. You can make a case for everyone to be dropped or sat or whatever. I'm leaning just because of what I've seen lately from Chris Boucher and what the Raptors may want to be next year. You can make the case that they should keep him around. What his contract will be, the finances, that's always going to be a factor with all of this. But having someone like, when I think about what the Raptors, what they're trying to do with, you know, having these, you know, size at all positions, like, it kind of did start to some degree with what Chris was able to do and what he was able to show last season, you know, having someone who could just affect the game in so many different ways. And he's really found like a good groove with what his role is. And it kind of actually is what he was doing last year too. I think earlier on in the season, he was so anxious to do more. He wants to show all the elements of his game. And that actually hindered, you know, the other parts of his game that were so successful and that were so good for him. It's like that hustle, three-point shooting has seemed to come around over the past few games. And having someone reliable who's been part of your system for so many years, I feel like that is very useful in today's NBA, especially because Chris Boucher's, they don't really grow on trees. I mean, we can talk about him being undersized at center, but then you can think about also how many positions he can guard, the three-point shooting that he does have, the hustle that he provides, and, you know, the unselfishness that, not saying that Precious or Utah are selfish, I'm just saying that you have someone who's really been part of the family for so long. And, you know, being successful with someone like him, I could see the case. But then with Utah, like, if he just gets his three-point shooting percentage up, like, he really does have to shoot 40%. And it's not just for the Raptors, like, for his career, his NBA career, he has to become a prolific three-point shooter, because he doesn't have some of, like, the driving game. The playmaking is great. He's a smart player, but he doesn't necessarily able to make plays with the ball in his hands. And getting to the bucket, he doesn't really have an array of moves to score the ball. So, you know, what do you have to be really, really good at? You have to be really good at a couple of things. And if he can really, you know, hone in on his three-point shooting, become like an amazing three-point shooter, that would be great. That would be very beneficial. And then Precious, I mean, I go back and forth with him a little bit, only because, like, just, I didn't put Ken Burch here, but Ken Burch is still a factor in this. And he's been injured for a lot of different reasons this year. Jesus, he's got a broken nose now. That's no good. But Precious, yeah, he just makes some really interesting plays. It's kind of a similar thing that Chris Boucher has gone through, is right, that he wants to do more. He knows he can do more. And then he does some really silly things at inopportune moments. There was a possession last night where I think it was kind of going, it was trending a little bit, is that, like, he's at the three-point line. Yeah, Pascal waiting for the ball. You got Chris Boucher waiting for the ball. Like, we're open. And Precious is just like going downhill. He's got tunnel vision. He is going to shoot the ball. And then he throws up an air ball. And both of them, I think collectively, Chris and Pascal, they just go like this. They hang their heads because they're like, Precious, you did it again. Jesus. But he's 22 years old. So I don't know. I should be answering this question because you answered it. I'll answer it too. I think you start Precious because, and I'm just banking on him figuring this out and understanding his role, and that, you know, pretty much if you want to be part of this, this is what you have to do. I think you sit Boucher because of the versatility, and you don't really know when you're going to need a Chris Boucher. Right. And I think you can find a player like Yuta Watanabe, and they are so desperate for a shooting guard or a guard who can just score the ball coming off the bench. And I don't think they're going to really get rid of Delano Banton or even Malachi Flynn. Like, they have to make a decision there, obviously, but that could be a roster spot that becomes available. But overall, how many guys can you keep on your bench that aren't going to be great shooters? And if he just isn't able to figure this out, and I don't know if he's going to, he's been very up and down this year. He's been injured. I get it. But he might be the person that I drop, unfortunately. Unfortunately. Very, very unfortunate. See, now you're right. This isn't fun.
I thought it'd be fun. It's a bummer exercise. No.
It is a bummer exercise. I thought it'd be fun. And here I am saying this is very hard and now I'm sad. And now we're ending the podcast too. So that's how we're going to be leaving things. Oh, geez. Katie, anything coming up on your end? Any work? Do you want to advertise?
There is work, but I won't advertise it yet. So in the meantime, you can always read Basketball Feelings or subscribe and listen to the podcast. Mo Dekeel was my last guest. And yes. I'll have a new exciting guest coming up for next week's episode. But that's at basketballfeelings.com. You can find me on Twitter at whatevs, WTEVS, where you can find most of my work.
Beautiful. You can find me at @Amit_man. Thank you very much for listening. Much appreciated. Please do rate, review, subscribe. And on YouTube, like, thumbs up, do all that fun stuff. Have a great day. We'll talk to you all soon.